Elizabeth Barrett is a wife, mother, grandmother, licensed marriage and family therapist, educator, eavesdropper, and emotion worker. She uses all of these skills to address the subjects we all grapple with in this conversation with a reluctant therapist. Hello and happy Tuesday, Elizabeth.
Happy Tuesday, Hank.
What's on your mind today?
Well, I have a few things on my mind, and they will feel a little disparate, I think, but in some way they will all come together. But the first thing is just kind of an epiphany that I had today. I've been thinking about it on some level, but it really kind of came up today as I noticed the fog wafting onto shore, and I was overcome with this feeling of calm. You know, I thought, oh my goodness, the world feels right again in some way. And I realized that, you know, although the weather's beautiful, I mean, in a sense, sunny skies and moderate temperatures is a beautiful experience. When it's happening out of sequence in January and early February, it's disorienting. And I was reading articles about, you know, climate change that talk about how when the seasons get out of whack, it throws our whole internal sense of balance off and it feels disorienting. And as the fog came in today and I started to feel calm, I realized how disoriented I had felt the last few weeks. And I knew I was uncomfortable and things felt out of whack, but just really how on edge I must have been feeling and not even recognizing it. But as the fog came in, all of a sudden I felt like I was myself and today started to feel better and things kind of fell into place. And so I think that we have to reevaluate our definition of SAD, seasonal affective disorder, because generally it's attached to this idea of being in the dark all the time and you start to feel depressed. But I think there is the same thing, seasonal affective disorder, if your seasons are supposed to be one way and all of a sudden it's sunshine all the time and blue skies and you're not prepared for that, it's not part of your cyclical experience, that it can cause those same feelings of depression, because a lot of people have been saying, I feel out of sorts, or I'm feeling kind of depressed and can't quite get, you know, it together. And I think there is some link to that, that we have to probably start looking at seasonal affective disorder in the sunshine as well, when it's not supposed to be as sunny.
Were you talking about the fog that came in real late? I mean, like at 8 or 9 this morning?
Yes. Yeah. And it was still lingering around when I came into work today. Yeah. And it's just lovely.
I woke up at 7 and it was bright and sunny. And then when I took my shower and got out, it's like, oh, the fog came in and it was very late. I'm used to waking up in the fog and having it clear by the time I come to work. But it was like opposite day.
Yeah. Well, I just seeing the fog was wonderful. And that is an interesting thing to be thankful for fog. But yeah, I think that's something that I want to spend more time thinking about, this whole idea of how our moods are connected to the weather. And we always associate with bad weather, but maybe too much of a good thing at the wrong time isn't good for us. And so that was one thought I was having today. But the whole kind of idea of the show was around two things that were going on. One, I assign a tech fast or a media cleanse to my students every quarter. I ask them to spend 24 to 36 hours not using their smartphones or their computers if possible, and then to write about what that experience is like. And I've noticed that each quarter, and I've been doing this for 10 years, each quarter the students' papers get a little more edgy. They're a little less blown away by how great life is without being attached to their phones and more indignant. Why are you making me turn off my phone? This has nothing to do with school and this did nothing for me. And I just feel them slipping further and further away from even having any conception of life outside of the social media, the virtual world, the virtual friendships, and also being able to be detached from these phones because they've become like a safety blanket or security blanket that a lot of them carry. A lot of the comments in the papers, I have 120 students this quarter, a lot of the comments started with, I was bored. And that was sad that they didn't know what to do with themselves if they couldn't watch Netflix or, you know, look through their social media pages. But then a lot of them said, I felt anxious. I felt afraid. I didn't want to go downtown without my phone. I didn't want to go on a hike without my phone. You know, I wanted to be available in case there was an emergency. And there was so much worry and fear tied into not having the phone in their pocket. And I just kept going back to them. How did people survive forever and ever and ever? And so it was made me sad that it's just more and more each quarter this phone has replaced our own internal sense of wellness, their own internal ability to look at the world around them, to find things to do that feel productive, to want to enrich their lives. You know, it's really kind of come down to this. A lot of their arguments were that, you know, if you're not in social media or on the phone, you're a social pariah. You won't have a friend group because it all exists on here. And in some ways I can understand that. That's how they communicate and find each other. But the idea that they would go to someone's dorm or go to someone's apartment and knock on the door was just the worst idea ever. It's like, we'd never do that. I wouldn't walk down the hall and knock on someone's door. That would be strange. So the social norms are shifting. And that's all, you know, kind of related to the horrors that people thought would happen once television was introduced or once radio was introduced. Like, I see those growing pains. I think the thing that really concerns me the most is this idea that without this phone, I am inherently unsafe in the world. And I need to feel connected to my people 24/7. So that was my takeaway. But then, as I was thinking about the show and wanting to talk about technology, I got a phone call from my daughter Kelly, who you know goes to school in Chicago. And ever since she left for school, she's been there 4 years now, my greatest concern was that something would happen and I'd be too far away to help. And that, you know, sending her off on the plane every time she was back to school, I always, you know, I'm so worried about that. So I get the phone call last week, Mom, I feel funny, something's weird, I don't know. And, you know, I kept giving all the great mom advice, like take a walk, drink some ginger ale, and take a bath.
Take a deep breath.
Take a deep breath. You know, have you gone to the bathroom? Like, I kind of worked through my list of cures, and none of them were helping. And so she was doing her own research, so thankful for, I guess, access to Dr. Worry on the internet. And she also said, I watch a lot of Grey's Anatomy, and so I was able to do some self-diagnosing, and I think I have appendicitis. I think my appendix is in trouble. So she ended up going to the emergency room, got herself there, and she wasn't doubled over in pain. It wasn't the things I was expecting if someone had appendicitis. So long story short, she's in the emergency room. The doctor there is kind of dismissing her also because there's not a lot of obvious symptoms. And she says, and Kelly credits Grey's Anatomy, she said, I would like to speak to your attending physician because I've done some diagnosing of myself and I think it's my appendix. Well, I'm glad she advocated for herself and she got the attending physician and they did a CT scan. And sure enough, this appendix was inflamed and it needed to come out. So come to my piece of it, I'm fielding the phone calls and thankful that I can FaceTime with her and see her face through this. So I'm loving technology in that moment and, you know, feeling like for some reason, if I can see her, I'm still in control or somehow helping her. You know, it's all just this false sense of security. But in the meantime, all of these things are happening really quickly. A surgeon's talking to me. What are the risks? We have to go now. We have the room. And I just felt so helpless and just out of control. And at some point, and the point was a lot more to what was happening at Kelly's end, at some point it became really apparent to me that there was nothing I could do. I had to let go and stop worrying and trying to micromanage what was happening 2,000 miles away and trust Kelly, who was handling things beautifully, just as you would hope that you can send your kids out and they learn these skills. She was handling things beautifully. She had contacted a couple friends that were already on board to come and, you know, be there and hang out with her. And then this godsend, this woman that has become a very good friend, and Kelly met her 2 years ago and has been helping with her kids and been a part of her life. She emerges on scene and just is the mom that I would have been if I were there, you know, just holding Kelly's hand, advocating with the doctor. You know, she just swooped in and was the person I would have been if I could have been there and was in my place and handled it probably better than I would have. And just knowing she was there, I was able to step back and let my worry go and trust that things were going to be okay. And I had to trust this surgeon. And it was such an amazing learning experience for me because it all went well. And when I was able to kind of let go and step back, I realized that one, my little box of telephone really wasn't doing me much good. And it was mostly kind of annoying everyone in Chicago who had things under control. And two, it was so profound to see that the universe is really good, that I think in a whole people are really good, and to be reminded that all the people that Kelly came in contact with during this emergency, from nurses to doctors to friends, couldn't wait to help and step in and be good. And I think in many ways, because of our 24/7 access to bad news and bad things and bad information and this idea that we're in danger all the time and that, you know, everyone is out to get you, has created this sense of fear and anxiety that I see not only in my students, but I had to remember myself is all a virtual social construct, that if you step away from all that bad media, that bad press about humanity, things turn out. So that's kind of where I'm at today, is I want to talk about two things. What do we do about technology and smartphones and how it's changing and rewiring our brains, our young people's brains and our brains, anyone who uses them? And two, how do we turn our worries into trust and pay attention to how the right people come into your life at the right time?
Did you have to rethink your tech fast? Like if one of your students was in the midst of this and then had appendicitis?
Well, so I guess, you know, when I think about the tech fast, I'm not saying don't use a microwave or don't use the phone. I think what I'm really trying to get them to do is step away from the social media piece of it.
Yeah, but if your appendix bursts, you can turn on your phone and dial 911.
Yes, and I'm thankful. And I also hope that they would have the wherewithal to look around and say maybe the person next to you would let you use their phone. Because that's the other thing, too, is that without their phone, you know, they felt hopeless. And I said, but all the people around you would step in.
Literally every single person around you has their phone.
Yes. And so in an emergency, to realize that if we open our eyes, put down the phone and look around, that there is a world around us wanting to be of help more times than not. So yeah, it made me want to rethink how I talk about the tech fast so that they don't get snarky and they actually pay attention to maybe the things that they are giving up for the false sense of security and having the phone. So yeah, that's kind of all the things that are bubbling up. So I think I'm going to open up the phone lines today and just ask people, when are times that the right person has come into your life at the right time? Just like my friend Michelle just swooped in and cared for Kelly in ways that I probably wouldn't have been as good at. And how do we let go of that worry and start to trust again? So we'll open up the phone lines in a few minutes. Our number is 805-781-3875. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist, and you can be part of the program by calling in. You can also like our Facebook page, The Reluctant Therapist, and get updates on shows. I post previous shows. If you missed last week with Randall and Keanu, I posted that show and their pictures. You can subscribe to our show by going to Apple Podcasts and search for A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist, and we'll upload the shows, or the shows will be uploaded to your device. And you can always reach me by sending an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. You are listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX, and we'll be back in a moment to open the phone lines and take your calls.
Well, I started out down a dirty road. Started out all alone, and the sun went down as I crossed the hill, and the town lit up, the world got still. I'm learning to fly, but I ain't got.
This is A Conversation with the Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. And today I want to talk about two things: our relationship with our smartphones and technology, and why is it that in this time that we feel we are more connected than ever before, we continue to feel insecure and vulnerable and afraid, afraid of being without our phones, afraid of the world around us, afraid of bad things happening and not being able to find out about it, and how we've kind of magnified our worries, ironically, because we think we have this device that keeps us safe. And also this idea of how can we transfer our worries into trust. And I keep using that term, and I want to thank my sister, Katie, because when I called her on Thursday and said, Kelly's going in for emergency appendectomy, for an appendectomy, which her daughter, my niece, had a year ago, I said, well, I feel so helpless and out of control, and I'm just having to let it go, let Kelly go and trust the universe. And Katie immediately said, I heard the saying once, it has been really helpful. And the saying was, we need to turn worry into trust. And then it has a whole different feeling inside of us. So I was able to do that. And it really was remarkable. I am so thankful for, as I mentioned, for my friend Michelle, who was packing up her family for a family vacation. They were leaving at 7 a.m. on Friday morning. She has three children, her husband, and dogs to take care of, and packing up the house. And she just put it all down and was at the emergency room with Kelly and stayed with her throughout the whole process and talked to the surgeon and stayed till she woke up and then came back and stayed with her when she came out of recovery and rubbed her feet and rubbed her back. That's the kind of person, I guess, that is the definition of the term godsend, that comes at that right moment, just when you need them most and unexpectedly makes everything okay. And it got me thinking about all those times in my life when the right person has come in at the right moment and done just the right thing. And I wonder, with our constant connection to our devices, if we might be missing out on those, I don't know, those moments of serendipity where you are in a situation and something happens and there's a person there and it is magical, that sense of kismet, or that idea of a godsend. Like, I wonder if we're looking down at our devices so often that we miss what's happening right in front of us, that the world is filled with people who want to be helpful, who are helpful, and who care about us in that moment. And we spend a lot of time trying to, I don't know, make those connections with the people that are not where we are in that moment. And it doesn't mean that we cut off ties with our family when we're away at school or with our friends when we've moved away. But to pay more attention where we are in that moment, to the people that are around us in that moment, to the environment that we're in that moment, and to be connected. And then to start realizing that there's a real sense of calm that can be felt when you look around and there's a lot of smiling faces and a lot of beautiful people in that space. And then we start to realize also, and I think maybe more so for younger people than for older people, for younger people, my students in particular, have to start to learn this idea of trust, that if a friendship and a connection is strong and real and good, that you can pick up at any time after long periods of being separated or not seeing each other, that real connections with family and friends are always there and don't need to be maintained by texting all day long or streaming through our devices. And I think that's a skill or an experience of trust that is harder to develop when there is this constant connection through the phone. And the thing, it's not always the students. A lot of my students said that their parents were really upset that they couldn't contact their student for 24 hours, that they were afraid that they weren't okay, or how would they know if something happened to you? And that's, you know, a fear then part I can relate to, having my daughter be away at school 2,000 miles away. I like the comfort of having her have a phone to contact me. But ultimately, having her be able to contact me 24 hours a day didn't keep her any safer. And in the times that I couldn't reach her, didn't make me feel any better. And if there was an emergency, there are always ways to contact her. And so part of that whole process of parenting is letting our children go, launching them into the world and trusting that the universe and their own skills and their innate abilities will keep them safe as best as anyone can be safe in the world, because life is kind of a crapshoot in a lot of ways. So all of this kind of learning to fly, letting our kids go, and also allowing them to trust themselves. Because if they feel like they need to be in touch with us 24/7, how will they ever learn to trust themselves? So I'm curious about our relationships with technology, and also any time in your life that you've allowed the magic of the universe to open up to you and that the right person stepped in at the right time. 805-781-3875 is the number to be part of the conversation. And Lorenzo, you're on the air. What's on your mind today?
Hi. How are you? And is the volume okay?
Yeah, you sound great.
Okay, wonderful. I think where I'm going with this is that there has to be a balance. We all really love the convenience of cell phones, just like right now. I'm sitting looking at the bay and wanted to make a conversation, so I didn't have to go find a phone.
Yes.
But I think what you said about turning the phone off and all that, we need to just reach out and communicate, you know, especially in class. And I think you see students that wish they could have their phone on or phone on just so they could look at Facebook or call their friends, even if it's important or not.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really important to let that go. Luckily for me, one time down in Costa Rica for 4 months, didn't have a phone, car. You know, I was hooked up to the internet, so if I really needed to speak to somebody, I got on Skype and that sort of thing. But it was really a fabulous balance for my life, letting go of that, because here I am back in Cayucas all the time, and of course I'm on my phone all the time, and I use it to take photos, et cetera, et cetera. But I guess where I'm going with this is I enjoyed your whole conversation about fear. People, you know, they take it, and you being a parent, you took it to the total levels until you had to finally let go, and things did work out.
Yeah,
you know. So I guess that's a thing, balance. I think if people could just turn their phone off occasionally, or just tell people, "Hey, I'm going to have my phone off for the afternoon. I'll talk to you later."
Yeah, and to be okay with that.
Yeah.
Well, and I think
that's about it.
Thank you, Lorenzo. And I think my concern is that for a lot of the students that I work with, they're not quite sure what to do with themselves once that phone goes off. And then the anxiety comes up. And so
well, you're actually talking about a different aspect of the new technology with different generations and how many of them grew up when they were 4 and 5 years old being taught how to use a computer. And now they're 21. And so the computer and cell phones are such a part of their generation that, and I'm not putting them down that way, it's just the way we're all instructed in life, you know what I mean? And so it's part of their world. And then to tell them, well, this shouldn't be part of your world, that's like almost, you know, giving them an option that they really don't want to hear.
Right. And also it makes no sense because the world operates in a different way. And so when we talk about balance, I think we have to even find where what our normal is now. And I don't think we have a normal yet. We haven't, because things have changed so quickly in our access to different social media platforms and ways of connecting is changed so quickly that we don't have a solid foundation of what is normal. What are the social norms in communicating or behaving? And until we get some sort of standard for behavior, we're going to have, I think, this really kind of off balance, extreme connection to the devices, because the alternative of no connection at all feels impossible.
You're absolutely right. And it's kind of scary because I think it's, quote, only getting worse. You can go everywhere in the world. And teenagers, they're on, you know, it's first thing in the morning and all night on the social media thing. And you kind of want them to get out and smell the roses, right? And everything else that goes along with it. So it's kind of you don't want to call it a plague because we all use this. That's what I mean. It's a great device, but like a lot of devices, it's almost like people that TV's fine, but some people it's 24/7 with a TV. So it's almost the same thing, that thing. And the other thing is, on a positive note, though, I do know a lot of people that were so plugged into Facebook and all that stuff for a couple of years, and then they just realized, wow, I really don't want to see pictures of my aunt's kitten, and I don't need to be part of this social scene, and they just let it go.
Yeah.
And so I think a lot of people do want to get existentialistic and be more in nature. So that's what I mean. Balance is the word for it, I think.
Absolutely. Renzo, thank you for taking the time to call on this beautiful day.
All righty. Bye-bye.
Take care. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. And we're talking about a kind of a mishmash of two things. What is our relationship to social media and to technology, and how has that changed our sense of security and well-being in the world? Have we kind of handed over all of our sense of safety and connection to being plugged into technology? And can we ever, will we be able to find that sense of wellness in just being connected to the community anytime soon? So that relationship with technology and safety and connection, in connection to this idea of, do we recognize in our lives that if we put trust out into the universe, when we let go of worry and we actually put trust out in front of us, have some faith in the universe and the world and the people that are in it, that the right people tend to come along at the right time and be just what you need in that moment. So I'm curious to know, have you had any of those experiences, and what are you feeling about technology? Do you feel safer because you have your phone, or is it a false sense of security? And how do we find a new normal in our relationship to technology and to our families and life? Our number is 805-781-3875. And I found a couple of clips talking about the current relationship with young people and technology and how it's impacting their day-to-day lives and kind of defining their social norms.
It's official. The millennials spend so much time on their phones, it's actually making them less social in real life. In a new study, 87% of participants say they missed out on a conversation because of social media distractions. And 54% say if they don't check their phones, they feel like they're missing out, according to FlashGap. It was worse with females. Findings revealed that 76% of girls and women check social media apps at least 10 times when with friends. That's compared to 54% of males. The most commonly used apps in social settings were Snapchat, Tinder, Facebook, and Instagram. Bottom line, the under 30 crowd is addicted to social media.
So here we are. There's a lot of changes that are going on rapidly, and these new technologies come up over and over again. Every day there's a new, we talk about Facebook, but Facebook is kind of passe for a lot of young people, and it's more about Snapchat and Instagram and scrolling through to find out from different news sources. Things are happening quickly. And I think on one hand, there's that piece, all the different ways that young people communicate and stay in touch. But I guess the thing that I'm focused on is this idea that without this smartphone in our pocket, we're somehow less safe. We're less secure, that having this makes us safer in the world, that if we can text someone 24/7, or if we can scroll our social media and check in with our friend group, that we're somehow more secure and more attached and more connected. Like, that's, I think, my concern, and was the thing that I kind of experienced this weekend last week when my daughter went in for her emergency appendectomy, where I felt like having this phone somehow kept us connected and that I knew that she was safe. But ultimately, aside from knowing that this was happening and getting the updates, I had to hand over her well-being to the people she was with there in Chicago, where she lives, and to trust the connections that she's made with friends and with the woman that she works for, Michelle, who ended up being the kind of the heart of this entire experience, and trusting the nurses and trusting the doctors. And I wonder if it's harder to let go than it used to be, because we can FaceTime, which makes us feel like we're really in the room with someone, or that we can Skype. Again, not diminishing that it's wonderful to have those tools as a way of interacting, but as far as this idea that it somehow makes us safer or more secure or more connected, I think that's a false sense. It sets us up for ending up feeling more isolated and more vulnerable and more insecure, because if we only are living virtually, when an emergency actually does happen and we need help, the people on the other end of the phone can't do anything. It would be the people in our immediate world around us. And have we created those connections in the world around us? 805-781-3875 is our number. Hi, Sharon, you're on the air. What's on your mind? Hi, Sharon, are you there?
Yes, I am. Hi, Elizabeth.
Hi there. What's on your mind today?
Well, I wanted to just share my experience. I'm a longtime ex-smoker, and I remember when I first quit smoking, how much extra time I had on my hands. Mm. And so fast forward these 40 years, and I found that I was really getting addicted to my iPad. It was a technology, you know, fix that I was going for all the time, recognizing that it was increasing my restlessness and eating up a tremendous amount of time. And so I have put some structure around my iPad use at this point in time. And I am amazed at how much more I get done that's meaningful to me, mm-hmm. rather than just sitting and, you know, looking at an iPad that has no redeeming quality at all, most 90% of the time.
Well, and it's interesting because it's supposed to be, you know, this great device for opening our worlds and enriching our lives. But I hear over and over again that there really isn't a lot of enrichment. It's very passive in its use, unless
That's
you're
right
editing something or Photoshopping or actually doing an activity utilizing the computer. Most of it's very passive and you're just viewing from a distance.
That's right.
Which ends up making you feel less full.
And I use my computer and my iPad in productive ways. It's not that I don't do that. And my iPhone, I use them in productive ways. But what I have to watch out for is the seductiveness of that that hit. Mm-hmm. That it's very similar to the hit that you get from an addictive substance.
Yeah, absolutely.
That helps you to feel pacified for a little bit, and then gets you restless for another hit.
Absolutely. Well said, Sharon. And I'm glad you brought that up because I actually have a clip from Simon Sinek, who's an author and a consultant, and he talks about millennials in the workplace and how our life is changing quickly with all of the media that's available. So let's take a moment and listen to Simon Sinek's words about addiction. Thank you, Sharon, for calling in.
We know that engagement with social media and our cell phones releases a chemical called dopamine. That's why when you get a text, it feels good, right? So, you know, we've all had it where you're feeling a little bit down or feeling a bit lonely. And so you send out 10 texts to 10 friends, you know, hi, 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 hi. Because it feels good when you get a response, right? Right? It's why we count the likes. It's why we go back 10 times to see if my Instagram is growing slower. Did I do something wrong? Do they not like me anymore, right? The trauma for young kids to be unfriended, right? Because we know when you get a hit of dopamine, which feels good. It's why we like it. It's why we keep going back to it. Dopamine is the exact same chemical that makes us feel good when we smoke, when we drink, and when we gamble. In other words, it's highly, highly addictive, right? We have age restrictions on smoking, gambling, and alcohol, and we have no age restrictions on social media and cell phones, which is the equivalent of opening up the liquor cabinet and saying to our teenagers, hey, by the way, this adolescence thing, if it gets you down. But that's basically what's happening. That's basically what's happening, right? That's basically what happened. You have an entire generation that has access to an addictive, numbing chemical called dopamine through social media and cell phones as they're going through the high stress of adolescence. Why is this important? Almost every alcoholic discovered alcohol when they were teenagers. When we're very, very young, the only approval we need is the approval of our parents. And as we go through adolescence, we make this transition where we now need the approval of our peers. Very frustrating for our parents, very important for us. It allows us to acculturate outside of our immediate families into the broader tribe, right? It's a highly, highly stressful and anxious period of our lives, and we're supposed to learn to rely on our friends. Some people, quite by accident, discover alcohol and numbing effects of dopamine to help them cope with the stresses and anxieties of adolescence. Unfortunately, that becomes hardwired in their brains. And for the rest of their lives, when they suffer significant stress, they will not turn to a person. They will turn to the bottle. Social stress, financial stress, career stress. That's pretty much the primary reasons why an alcoholic drinks, right? What's happening is because we're allowing unfettered access to these dopamine-producing devices and media, basically, it's becoming hardwired, and what we're seeing is as they grow older, too many kids don't know how to form deep, meaningful relationships. Their words, not mine. They will admit that many of their friendships are superficial. They will admit that their friends, that they don't count on their friends, they don't rely on their friends, they have fun with their friends, but they also know that their friends will cancel on them if something better comes along. Deep, meaningful relationships are not there because they never practice the skill set, and worse, they don't have the coping mechanisms to deal with stress. So when significant stress starts to show up in their lives, they're not turning to a person, they're turning to a device, they're turning to social media.
If you're just tuning in, this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and that was Simon Sinek talking about dopamine and the release of dopamine and how this mimics that good feeling that we crave in our bodies, and that's what a lot of people are experiencing with their technology use and how it has diminished the quality of our relationships. So is that a similar experience that you're having or that you see in young people? And how do we recreate those skills of connection with other people so that we can connect with other people in ways that are profound and meaningful? And then when we do run into trouble, when we do have a crisis or an emergency, that we have a social support group here in the place that we're living that'll step in and help us. Our number is 805-781-3875. Hi, Robin. Thanks for waiting. What's on your mind today?
Oh, okay. I was interested in the idea of people being there at the right time to help out with a situation. Well, and my different thoughts about social media today. Way back in the 50s, when we didn't have that social media, I was only like 10 or 11 years old, and I was swimming in the ocean off the coast of San Clemente, and I happened to get caught in a current, and the current just pulled me out, and even, you know, like a 10, 11-year-old, I thought this was it. But out of nowhere, and you know, time stands still when you're in danger, somebody just plucked me out of the ocean and took me to the shore, and I was saved. Well, you know, there were people around me and, you know, making sure that I was okay. Well, that person, I found out later, was just a 6-foot man who just walked out and literally plucked me out. And so no social media. It just, like you said, it just happened just out of nowhere, and somebody saved me. And, you know, it's an incident that will always stay with me.
That's a wonderful story.
It really is. And I'm thinking about the social media today and Facebook, and I've observed that it's almost treated like a fan club I don't really participate that much, but I want to keep in touch with my family back east. Well, certain members, they use it as like a fan club, and it's constant praise and just receiving gratification of being so wonderful. I mean, just on and on and on, and it's like, I'm beginning to think that the person feels like they don't exist or something else is going on where they need this praise constantly. And it's like you don't rely on yourself to, you know, I did a good job, but it, you know, you don't need to advertise it. It's something that makes you feel good inside, and it isn't necessary to go out and tell everyone and constantly get, you know, it's like, I don't know what to say anymore. I have all these adjectives to describe, oh, these beautiful pictures. Oh, my, I congratulate you for this. And then it's not just once. It's constant.
Right.
And so I'm thinking, oh, dear, you know, I'm beginning to sound like a broken record. How much the person on the receiving line seems to me that, well, how sincere is this praise?
And I think that's, you're hitting on so many points, Carol, that I think is the dilemma of moving into these new social norms around, you know, media. Are we giving up our ability to develop those inner sense, that intrinsic sense of well-being, that inner resilience, that belief that we're able to cope with situations and to have the skills to face adversity on our own without having to lean on or go back to our virtual support group, as you talk about. And I think that that's a great point. You know, it's a wonderful tool. There's a lot of connectivity possible, networking that can be done, but we have to pay attention to the things we've let go. And my concern is that for this rapidly increasing generational use, that there are very few young people now who don't remember, who remember a time there wasn't social media. They're not developing that inner sense of well-being because they have this ability to jump onto their phone for a hit when they need it, that reassurance. And again, I'm glad you brought the idea of having the right person come at the right time. We have to let go and trust the universe in order to make space for the right person to come to our life at the right time, to be available and open to good things to come our way. We have to put out into the world a sense of openness. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. Our number is 805-781-3875. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. And Carol, you're on the air. What's on your mind? Hi, Carol. Are you there? Carol?
About this, what you were just talking about, I work with middle schoolers. So if a grown woman feels that she's being constantly called upon to praise everybody, imagine what that's like for 12-13-year-olds. Mm-hmm. They don't get a chance to build self-efficacy because they're always looking for reinforcement from other people. So they're not really examining their own ideas, their own achievements. It's just like, you know, like somebody, every time they did something, they turn around and they had to get a high five. Mm-hmm. And I just am concerned that if you took the phone away from them, they would be lost.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of growing evidence and research showing that it's not just being lost, but it is a sense of overwhelm and terror and anxiety and withdrawals, which are indicative of an addiction. And I think that's what we're going to see before we see a balance, before we see people stepping back and utilizing the phone as a tool. I think we're going to see an increase in kind of mental discomfort when it comes to phone use or no phone use. I mean, there is just the body of evidence that how people respond with and without their phone is indicative of addictive behaviors. Just as Simon Sinek was talking about, you know, that dopamine release that comes starts to become addictive.
Boredom is something, the minute that the teacher isn't fascinating or the television program isn't engaging, rather than looking inside themselves for a solution, they start this talk just back and forth that it doesn't really have content. It's just, hi there. It's sort of like a lover who constantly says, do you love me? Do you really love me? Are you sure you love me? You know, and these poor kids are seeking this all day long.
Well, and I keep thinking also to keep folding it back into the topic, not just the validation of their existence, but I keep thinking about that sense of wellness, that there's a lot of fear attached with, I don't exist if I'm not in this virtual social group. I don't exist if I'm not talking to my parents 24/7 while I'm at college. It's that sense of obliteration of the self when we're not connected. And that concerns me because then we have a lot of people who start to view the world as a very scary, fearful place. And then the media owns us because it's ready every second of the day to tell us that the world is a scary place to be fearful of. And then we start disconnecting from each other even more. And it kind of goes back to my whole story. And then if there is a true emergency, will we trust those sharing the experience with us? And if we don't, then we're going to be in bigger trouble.
I agree.
Carol, thank you for taking the time to call. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. And I just keep thinking about how it's also not just young people. It's not just our millennials. You know, I see it with my generation and people older than me and everyone who has access to technology today, that it is easy to hand over your life to the virtual world. For one, the apps are all set up to kind of draw you in, just like the machines in Vegas. They send out likes and they have buzzers that goes off and they have all of these things built in to the apps to keep us wanting to go back. I can get drawn into them too. I'm not above this. You know, I'm not seeing this as a wringing of my hands because I'm outside of the culture looking in. I'm in this. I'm in this culture. I text. I have Instagram. I have Facebook. I have all of these tools. I utilize them to communicate with my kids and with my friends. I'm in this culture as it's changing. And that's why I'm bringing it up, because I'm not immune to this. I found myself deep in it, and I had not realized how deeply in it I was until I had this crisis last week with my daughter needing surgery and realizing I wasn't in control. This little phone wasn't keeping me safe or her safe. That ultimately it was a tool and it was a nice convenience, but what really, really mattered at the end of the day was that there were people, actual people, that were good and loving and helpful and caring, that were there to support her and take care of her when I could not physically be there. And that was, for me, the greatest takeaway of this whole experience, was this needing to step back and stay engaged with the actual humans sharing the planet with us. 805-781-3875. Hi, Donald. You're on the air. What's on your mind? Hi.
Well, I was interested in what you're saying, because a lot of the time, basically what you're centered on are inner relationships with people. Mm-hmm. But I think there's a larger world out there. There's nature, and there's the world that doesn't have anything to do with words. I happen to be, and thoughts, I happen to be an artist and a painter, and I love music as well. And one of the things that inspire me is getting out into life, in nature, walking, and so on. And I go out and I walk, and I notice that so many people have their cell phones on all the time. They're carrying on a conversation, and they're missing out on what's actually going on, or they're plugged into some sort of a device to listen to music or the news or something. And the birds are going on. There's wind going through the trees. There's the crunch of the earth underneath you. There's so much going on. And if we're in this virtual world all the time, I think creativity will suffer from that, because there's nothing. We're not vitalizing our life with anything outside of something that is human made. Mm-hmm. Part of the problem of a lot of people, I think, is that they feel that they don't have contact. But not only they don't have contact with people, they don't have contact with something beyond people.
Mm-hmm. Well, and one of my students wrote, Donald, that he realized that his creativity had atrophied since he got a phone, because he used to love to draw and to paint and to do music, but now he never goes to those activities because he has his phone. And it was so profound. He said, because I hadn't thought of it, he said, I worried that those actual skills I used to have atrophied so much that I won't be able to rebuild them in my life.
Exactly. And also, we're turned into sort of pat phrases and so on, so that we don't really even come up with articulating our feelings and so on. We just have a few of these abbreviated comments that everyone knows, and you feel good because they respond the same way. Mm-hmm. But there's nothing that is really making us grow beyond that. And that's, to me, what being a human being is.
Beautifully said, Donald. Thank you for calling in.
You're welcome. Thanks for the conversation.
805-781-3875 is our number. Deborah, what's on your mind today?
Good afternoon. How are you? I've been listening to the show. My concern with this generation and technology and the pace of how technology rises every single day is, what preventive care can we do for this generation? Mm-hmm. Because they virtually are robotic and mechanical, and you see people walking, you see people doing transactions at different businesses, and the rudeness of using your phone while you're doing a transaction, whether it be at the bank, the store, wherever. I see people walk, and they're literally on their phone. You say hello, they don't acknowledge you. They virtually don't even look up where they're walking. My concern is, how are we going to prevent this addiction? You know, there are certain things that parents can do for parental controls, but what about the cell phones and the iPads? Kids just are not sociable any longer.
When I also...
My child graduated age 15 from college. Very smart. She is so caught up in her phone, she's not even the same person anymore.
And I think that's part of the problem, is that it's not just the younger generation. They're learning these social norms, these behaviors, because it's being modeled by adults, you know, that are on their phone all the time with their kids. You know, if it's going to change, it's going to be a top-down sort of thing, because no one is going to willingly give up this easy access to entertainment. So it will be, I think, a really tough extricating ourselves as adults from the convenience of being able to throw a screen in front of our kids, or being able to, you know, go in ourselves. Because I don't want it to become a beating up of the younger generation. When I see my students being so tied up in this, it, a lot of that behavior is not just generational. It's modeled from their parents. And their parents are saying, I want that phone on all the time because I want to be able to access you 24/7.
Yeah, and I understand all of that, but I role model my children, and they're all adults.
Yeah.
My youngest is 19, and I run a property management business, and I'm telling you, people flip out when I put my phone on silent.
And
they literally wig out and say, you know, we couldn't get a hold of you.
Yeah.
You know, and I let everyone know, look, my phone goes off at 5 p.m. I will contact you the next day.
Yeah. It is.
And so, you know, it's just, I put down the law to my business and all of my subcontractors, whatever. I've taught my children, look, you have got to put the phone down. This is not your life. You need to look around, and there's a person right next to you. Say hello to them. Mm-hmm. Smile. Wave. There's no connection there any longer.
No, I appreciate your thoughts on it too, Deborah, because I think it is the ongoing conversation of our generation. How will we find our way with these tools that are on one hand helpful, but the other hand incredibly addictive? Mark, what's on your mind today? Oh, do I have Mark? Let me try again. Mark, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hi, what's on your mind today?
Well, I was kind of listening to the last few calls, and I was wondering what your take as a therapist would be on the effect of this sort of substitute interaction, but with the absence of any human presence or touch, a handshake, a hug, that doesn't happen on a screen.
No.
And that is a very important human connection. And I'm just wondering if you'd seen anything like that with your students. Is there a different attitude towards that, or... you know, is there something missing there?
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, because there is this difference in our connection when we text someone and the text pops up and you feel good in that moment. It's like, oh, they love me, but it goes away very quickly. The difference between the satisfaction, that internal pleasure we get when a text pops up or a like pops up, is that it's brief. But when it comes to a hug, or someone holding our hand or putting their arm around us, that comes into our whole body in different ways. And that good feeling, that release of dopamine and serotonin, is much longer standing. You know, it stays within the body. That sense of well-being stays with us. So there is a lot to this kind of momentary satisfaction that comes to the phone being replaced, or replacing that good old-fashioned hug that really sustains us. And I think that goes back to my conversation that we think we're connected because we can talk or see someone on the phone, but we're really not physically and, you know, emotionally connected in ways that are profound.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'm just wondering, you know, and you can have a dopamine substitution.
Yes.
But, you know, there's got to be more than the human touch than simply the, you know, that little high.
No, but as I'm saying,
it seems like that an individual would be lacking something long term.
Yeah, and it is more than that. No, you're right. It's more than just the dopamine, and I'm glad that you clarified it. It's not just that instantaneous shot that we get with our phone. When someone hugs you or puts their arm around you, it's a much deeper connection. It fills our body in deeper ways. You have that good sense with the dopamine, but there is a longer sense of well-being in our cerebral cortex, right? That the whole body is engaged with that sense of well-being and calm. You know, that idea that when someone hugs us, we kind of fold into their arms because there is this relaxation that happens throughout our entire body. And that is long-lasting as opposed to the gratification of a text.
Yes.
I'm glad you brought that up, Mark. Thank you for calling in. And Bill, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Creativity.
All right.
And the fact that whoever writes the code for the computer that does the work is the one who tells the world how smart they
are.
Okay. And, well, because since everything is dependent upon computers...
Yes.
Somebody's got to write the code. If all of your information only comes from computers, it's whoever put the information in who says whether it's right or wrong.
So,
and what's happening is this creativity that is disappearing, which I think is the crux of what you're talking about, people not being afraid when they don't have their phone.
Yes.
Is because they've lost the ability to be inside their minds of their own accord. And as such, they just see, as you said, they face a blank wall when the phone goes off. And that's what I'm afraid of, is that my neurosurgeon really needs to know what's going on if he's going to cut on me. And if he's not inquisitive enough to figure out that, oh, you're wired different from other folks, then there's going to be a problem.
So we have to have more than just the information that comes to us through the screen. There has to be that part of our brain that actually is creative, thinks outside the box, and looks for other solutions, right?
Right. When the phone, as I had a student once who bent over to flush the toilet and dumped her phone right down, gone. She had to function the whole day without it and managed to succeed in functioning a whole day without it.
And it starts to become almost an act of courage to be able to make it for a day. Thank you, Bill, for calling. And just try to squeeze in one last comment from Chris. You're on the air.
Hi. Your original subject about, you know, chance meetings and handing your life over, or at least having people help you.
Yes.
That rings true with me. You know, my good friend Stan, I met chance, met at work, and he changed the path of my career. I've met other people that it was just kind of a random meeting, but people mean well, and you know, life changes. I met Joe and ended up living with Joe out at the ranch for a while, and it was all it seems like, you know, someone was guiding this chance meeting to be of benefit to us both.
Thank you. And thank you for kind of pulling the conversation full circle, because yes, if we can put our phones down and get disconnected from our virtual world, there is a whole world of people out there that could change our lives. So this has been a conversation with the Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. Thank you for tuning in. You can find out more about the show on our Facebook page. You can send me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. Listen to previous shows at kcbx.org under the News Talk tab. And you can podcast through Apple Podcasts. As always, I appreciate you supporting Public Radio KCBX, and we will continue this conversation next Tuesday at 2.
What would you do if I sang out of tune? Would you stand up and walk out on me? Lend me your ears and I'll sing you a song. I will try not to sing out of key. Yeah. Oh, baby, how do I? All I need is my brother.
I will help if I can.
I say I'm gonna get high. What do I do when my love is away?
tell, no, it's said no more. Gonna get out of that.